BJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 25th, 2025. Well, as difficult as it is to discern the worst of Israel's litany of crimes against humanity committed in Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Iran over the last 22 months, whether the destruction of vital infrastructure, targeting of engineers, doctors, professors, artists, and poets in their offices and at home with their families, or perhaps the designed famine in Gaza, the nadir of this descent into madness for me has been the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or GHF, and its Hunger Games-style baiting and murder of the sick and starving. It is a crime without precedent. Dr. Dorotea Guichardo is the Director of Development for GLIA Equal Care and leads GLIA.org's Open Gaza Initiative project. She's a literal eyewitness to the Gaza genocide and member of Eyewitness Gaza, a coalition of health professionals, aid workers, community leaders, and others who are calling out policymakers and the media for their failures to reveal and demand an end to Israel's genocide in Gaza. Dorotea and other members of Eyewitness Gaza held a press conference last Friday in Ottawa to again urge this country, Canada, to act to stop the killing. Dorotea Guichardo in the first half. And if you can make sense of what's happening between Israel and Iran, you're a better geopolitical analyst than me. If you can't, then you're in luck, because I've just such a person appearing in the second half. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has, as well as serving as advisor to governments at the highest level, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. Among Helmer's many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, Skripal in Prison, and the recently released Skripal sequel, Long Live Novichok, The British Poison That Fooled the World. John's recent article at Dances with Bears, congratulations to everyone in a rope-a-dope strategy, the bell also sounds for rest periods, bravely sallies forth into the breach of both Western media narratives and Donald Trump's cognitive and dictive capabilities. John Helmer, trying to make it make sense in the second half. But first, Dr. Dorotea Guichardo, and doing more than witnessing the Gaza genocide. Welcome back to the program, Dorotea.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Dorotea, for those who don't know, and there are legion of those even at this late date, for reasons maybe we can cover later, who, firstly, Dorotea, is a GHF?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So GHF stands for the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, and it began operations in Gaza sometime around the end of May of this year. But satellite imagery showed activity in southern Gaza, so in that area called the Moreg Corridor, by about mid-April. So we knew early spring that something was in development. And then it became very clear by May what was happening. And what was happening is that this nonprofit, which is registered in both Switzerland and the United States, were setting up shop in the south of Gaza. The details of the organization itself are really quite murky, but in practice, it's an Israeli-American scheme that both regulates and also restricts the delivery of aid supplies into Gaza and then within the Gaza Strip itself. And we know that multiple human rights organizations, legal organizations have noted that much of the way that GHF operates violates international law. So since October of 2023, there was a well-established UN mechanism that already existed inside Gaza to ensure that the most vulnerable in the population were able to receive care and aid as they needed it. And those operations were broadened and stepped up to respond to the escalating violence inside Gaza. But we also know that the ongoing occupation, the Israeli occupation of Gaza, the brutal military siege, has prevented supplies from getting in. So those UN mechanisms have been struggling to meet the needs of the population, but ultimately have been doing a very decent job. And the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is designed essentially to replace that entire system. It's designed to replace decades of institutional knowledge with a militarized aid structure.
Yeah, this is unprecedented. It's in my knowledge. Has there ever been a humanitarian aid organization with its own mercenary army attached to it?
No. And we can thank the United States and we can thank Israel for this one. The model essentially sidesteps all established channels. It sidesteps any site that already existed in Gaza, any organization that was already providing aid, and substitutes those with, as you say, armed contractors, right? We have these American mercenaries that are hired to secure the perimeter of these sites, all under Israeli control. It's, to my knowledge, something like this is completely unprecedented. And it is violating all of the core principles of humanitarian assistance, those being humanity, impartiality, neutrality, and independence. And I'll note, you know, like the Israeli government and GHF, we're talking about this as unprecedented. So do they, right? Like they're presenting the GHF as some kind of innovation in food delivery. But in practice, we know that Palestinians who are seeking aid are being subjected to relentless military fire that are leading to injuries and casualties.
Well, in May 29th, the Gray Zone reported that the GHF was operating on a $100 million grant from a single unknown donor. That donor was later revealed to be the Israeli government, itself, through the Mossad. Even some of their own parliamentarians were complaining about Israel having to pay for the GHF. They go on, the Gray Zone does, in talking about some of these military contractors, to name a couple of them, one of them being UG Solutions, and they cite one of its ads for people to join up, and they appealed to snipers with prior experience in combat zones, guaranteeing the highest level of weapons proficiencies and advanced combat skills. These are the people that they're advertising to man and to stand heavily armed behind the bags of flour that they're using to entice the starving in Gaza. I mentioned in the introduction that this is a bait and snipe operation. Am I being too cynical in saying that?
No, I don't think you're being cynical enough. I mean, it is dangerous. It is radical. It is dehumanizing. You know, it's a farce, right? People are referring to it as humanitarian cover or humanitarian alibi. Right. It allows the Israeli government, GHF does, to say we're bringing in aid while at the same time perpetuating the genocide. Right. And it's no surprise that it came into being around the same time that we were dealing with the strict blockade on entry of any supplies started on March 2nd. Right. And so within a couple of months, you have a population that has access to absolutely nothing. And then Israel says, well, we have the solution. Right. It's this GHF model. All of it is designed to destroy life inside Gaza. This is part of the genocide apparatus. You are taking starving people. You are ensuring that they remain starved and you are actively murdering them for trying to access aid. It is incomprehensible to me that we don't have an international community that is coming out and speaking out against what is happening here. And that includes our own government at home. There is no reason why the Canadian government is not actively condemning these actions and supporting those condemnations with tangible things, right? There are tangible things that the Canadian government and other governments can be doing to promote accountability by Israel to try to shift the situation on the ground in the Gaza Strip to ensure that people aren't being murdered just for trying to live, just for trying to provide food and sustenance for their families. The targeting and killing of civilians at or near these aid sites is happening every single day. Every single day, hospitals are receiving mass casualty incidents of people being sniped, as you've pointed out, or they're being injured or killed by explosions, right? We have anti-personnel grenades being lobbed from drones in the sky. And my medical staff is reporting that every single one of those people coming in are in deep levels of starvation. Every single victim is skin and bones. And nearly every patient talks about a full family of people that is starving to death and how they were willing to risk their lives for the possibility of feeding them.
This is reported by the BBC. Certainly not, it's, I would say, one of the worst propagandists on for Israel and, and covering all of this up. But even the BBC reports today that yesterday, June 24th, at least 46 people, that could mean 406, but at any rate, the BBC says at least 46 people waiting for aid were killed in two different incidents on the 24th. They, the BBC, quotes the people of the UN agencies calling this an abomination and a death trap that these people waiting to get delivered a bag of flour to try to keep their families going are killed in this way, and say that more than 410 Palestinians have been reportedly killed by gunfire and shelling at these GHF, I don't even know what to call them, shooting galleries, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have some actually even more updated numbers for you, if you can believe it, because as of today, we're at 518, you know, and the International Committee of the Red Cross reported that its field hospital in Gaza yesterday, the one located in Rafah, which is nearest to one of these quote unquote aid sites, had 149 people coming in, all of them wounded, on their way to try to get flour, to try to get some kind of food for their families who are starving. And 16 of those, and 16 people on top of that arrived dead on arrival, with three dying subsequent to arriving to this hospital. This Most of them suffering from gunshot injuries.
This is incredible to me, Dorothea, that last year there was the infamous flour massacre. It was a one-off event of this very nature. And it sent a shudder, I'm sure, through everybody of conscience in the world. Now we're seeing attacks much worse every single day.
Every day.
And hardly a murmur. Hardly a murmur.
Yeah. There's a parallel here to so much of the violence that has been inflicted in Gaza, right? When we think about the initial bombing of the Al-Ahli Hospital in October of 2023, and there was some initial outcry, right? Because hospitals are supposed to be safe sites. And of course, there was questioning of the veracity of the claims that the Israeli military was responsible for having attacked it. And since then, what have we seen? We've seen a complete dismantlement, a complete destruction of the entire health system in Gaza. I don't even know how many times the Israeli military has assaulted specific hospitals, because they do it repeatedly. They do it so many times, and it barely elicits a blip in the media. It's wild to me how inundated we are daily with atrocities and how normalized they become. I don't have the answers for that. I mean, I think historians 50, 70 years from the future will try to piece together how we've enabled this genocide to unfold in the manner that it has. But in this moment, as somebody who is trying to provide aid, as somebody who is trying to provide care in the Gaza Strip, it is the most frustrating, and honestly, I feel physiologically ill every single day, knowing that I have to deal with the hypocrisy of the international community that is willing to turn a blind eye to the atrocities that are happening on the daily. I'm at a complete loss, and I know that so many other aid workers are, but we are persisting and we are continuing because we believe in humanity. We believe in the right of Palestinians to live. And so we persist, but I don't know. I live in a very strange place right now, and I'm finding it very hard to make much sense of it.
Yeah, let's talk about that. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dr. Dorothea Gochiardo. She is the Director of Development for GLIA Equal Care and leads GLIA.org's Open Gaza Initiative project. She's a literal eyewitness to the Gaza genocide and member of Eyewitness Gaza, a coalition of health professionals, aid workers, community leaders, and others trying to call out our policymakers, as she's describing here, and the media, too, for their failures. You're suffering what sounds to me like a sort of PTSD. For me, I think it could be that the worst of it is that there are no historians to talk about these things in the future, at least none that are willing to. Depending on which way things go, we seem to be right at the crossroads of what humanity is going to be like for the foreseeable, whether that this daily sacrifice of thousands of innocents is going to be normalized and just brushed aside with our coffee in the morning, or it will be visited eventually, I am sure, upon us as well. We little people all in the first so-called first world too. But this idea that all of our institutions, when you say you don't understand how our government could allow not only the government, but the medical association, the bar association, all of the pillars of our so-called society are standing mute, or worse, are actively propagating the continuance and support of a clear genocide. A five-year-old could tell you, could look at what's going on for a minute and tell you this is wrong. And yet here we are.
You know, the funny thing is, I actually have a PhD in history, and I feel every day like my head is going to explode because I can recognize and I can see the parallels to events in the past. And I guess I'm one of those members of the population who was duped into believing in the sanctity of international law, right? Like, I was duped into believing these liberal notions that were widespread in our education system post-1960, post-1970. But the reality is we're dealing with governments who are hypocritical, and hypocrisy is part of the feature. You know, and the other thing that history tells us is that these events take a really long time, right? They take a long time to unfold. They take a long time to reckon with. And this particular event, what we're seeing now with the genocide in Gaza, is something that we are reckoning with now and that we will reckon with for the rest of our own lives. And while I'm here, I'm going to do what I can for the people of Gaza, and witnessing what the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is doing is instructive, because it tells us what direction governments are willing to go. So you had mentioned, for example, that the Israeli government had given millions of dollars in funding to this organization. I believe just yesterday, the Trump administration authorized providing $30 million to this organization in order to distribute aid, so-called aid, inside Gaza. And as far as I know, it's the first time the U.S. government has officially declared funding for this organization. It's going to be coming through what was USAID, which I believe is now being folded into the State Department. And it's a sign of things to come. It's a sign of private contracting firms led by American military veterans, by American intelligence officers, to deliver aid in highly contentious areas, right? In conflict zones. And I'll add, it's not just in Gaza, because apparently they are also distributing aid in Africa at the exact moment the country is escaping me. So it's something that is creeping outwards. And it's something that everybody should be concerned about. The UN system may not be perfect, but it's an established system that was created on principles of fairness. It was created on principles of humanity and impartiality. And inside Gaza, we had mechanisms like UNRWA that provided aid to millions of people. And here's the thing. So the GHF will come out and make a claim that, oh, we distributed 2 million aid packages today, which, by the way, is a claim that nobody can verify. And even if that were true, so what? Okay, so you distributed 2 million packages of flour. So what? What about all of the Palestinians in Gaza that need medical care? What about all of the babies in Gaza that are currently at risk of starvation because they don't have the baby formula that they need to survive? What about all of the pregnant women that need prenatal care, or the women who recently gave birth who need postnatal care? What about all of the people who are suffering from chronic illnesses and can't get access to their medications? What about the millions of children that have no access to education at this moment? What about the millions of students who were never able to graduate from high school or complete their university studies, whose lives are completely upended? What about everybody who has no home? They're living in tents. They have no fuel in order to burn anything in order to make food. And so they burn plastics, which is polluting their immediate environment. What about them? Right? You can go on Twitter and you can say, oh, we delivered X amount of whatever. But if you are not addressing the systemic issues, if you are not pointing a finger at the Israeli blockade, at the occupation, at the brutal military siege, at the ongoing devastation and genocide within the Gaza Strip, then you are part of the problem.
Talk a little bit, Dartea, about GLIA, GLIA.org. What does GLIA do or try to do?
So GLIA is a medical solidarity organization, which means that we work with communities that are facing low resource circumstances to try to provide opportunities, knowledge, expertise to allow for homegrown solutions in the medical field. And in Gaza, that has meant addressing the blockade. So we were born essentially in 2012, 3D printing medical devices that we would clinically validate in Canada so that we knew that they were tested, they were approved, and they could be used. The Gaza that we started in no longer exists. The Gaza that I did my two rotations in 2024 no longer exists. In fact, at that time, I spent all of my time in Rafah. That no longer exists. And so when we look forward and looking ahead and thinking, okay, how are we going to assist? How are we going to bring solidarity to Palestinians in this moment? We're literally doing whatever we can based on what our national staff is asking of us and how they are directing us. And so that involves providing medical relief with international delegates. It involves the creation of a field clinic inside Gaza, which, by the way, we had to evacuate our first clinic, which was located in Zawaida because it got hit by shrapnel and was then suddenly inside a red zone. So we've evacuated that clinic and we are reopening south of Deir al-Balah in another week or so. And it also involves trying to figure out what local technological solutions there could be in order to get around this blockade. So basically we're in Band-Aid mode, right? The situation is so dire. It's what can we do at this exact moment in order to try to remedy this exact thing? And as the situation on the ground evolves, we will continue to evolve as well.
Well, right now, speaking of our prime minister and all the leaders of the Western world that have been supporting what's been going on these last 22 months in Gaza and the other places that Israel is running rampage, they're in The Hague. But before you get your hopes up, they're not in The Hague in the dock where they belong, but they're in The Hague meeting. And from there, President Trump said today that he sees progress in what he calls the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza, promising that, perhaps a new ceasefire might be struck. What is your prognosis, Dartea, for the future? How long can GLIA stay operating, do you think, in Gaza? And can you update me on Tarek Loubani, one of the co-founders of GLIA, who is, I believe, still in country? Is that right?
That's right. We're going to be in Gaza for as long as we can be in Gaza. And if we can't physically be in Gaza, then we will find ways to assist otherwise. It's non-negotiable for us. In terms of Dr. Loubani, so yes, he's currently in Gaza. He entered earlier this month and will stay there for a few months. He's an emergency physician, so he's providing emergency services within Han Yunus. Importantly, I think his case demonstrates the commitment that we have as an organization. So I'm not sure how aware you are of the level of rejections that emergency medical teams are receiving from the Israeli government. All emergency medical teams operate under the World Health Organization, and we apply to the Israeli government through the WHO to enter Gaza. We apply for these delegates to go in for 2 to 4 weeks at minimum in order to provide assistance in Gaza's hospitals or what's left of them. And the Israeli government is in complete control over who can go in. So not just what we've been talking about aid, but also who, right? Who was allowed to go into the Gaza Strip and to volunteer. And since February, March, roughly half, so 45% of all international healthcare workers who've applied to enter Gaza through the WHO have been arbitrarily denied. Half of them, these are highly qualified, highly competent, vetted professionals that are desperately needed inside Gaza, and the Israeli government has denied them. Dr. Lubeni was one of those people. However, he was denied back in May 2024. So we appealed. We appealed to the Israeli government. We launched a court case against the Israeli government to allow him access. And it snaked its way through the courts. It took about a year. And a judge ruled in his favor. And so off he went. And that's how he got in. And I share this story because I want to emphasize that we look at the situation in Gaza and we're despondent, right? Like we see all of the horrific things that are coming out of the Gaza Strip and we wonder to ourselves, what can we do? And I think that's part of the strategy by the Israelis, right? It's meant to leave people feeling like there's nothing you can do. But there's so much that we can do. There are levers that we can constantly be pulling, and it's up to us to figure out what those levers are. And if it's within your grasp, you pull it. And so that's what we did, and that's where he is now. And so I think that there are multiple ways to be involved and to be assisting, and we're just going to keep exploring all of those ways as we can. So as I said, he is in there now, and he will be in there minimum until the end of the summer.
Well, Dorotea, we're fast out of time. How do people listening assist GLIA.org and find out more about Eyewitness Gaza and the other projects that you're involved in?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So in terms of GLIA, you've mentioned the website. I would say come visit the website, check out the different projects that we're working on. If there's something that you think you might be interested in volunteering with, let us know. We're highly volunteer-based. There are also, of course, opportunities to donate should somebody have the means to do so. But at this moment, I think the most important thing is advocacy. The most important thing is showing up, whether that means you attend a protest or you wear a watermelon pin or, you know, you share a firsthand perspective from a Palestinian to a friend. Anything that we do to keep talking about Palestine, to keep Palestine in the news and to keep putting pressure on our governments to do what is right and to do what they are obligated to do under international law, those are the most important things that anybody could be doing right now.
The presser that I mentioned, it's titled by CPAC, and it's at cpac.ca. You can find it there. The heading is Coalition of Canadians Hold a News Conference on Gaza, June 20, 2025. You and a number of other members of Eyewitness Gaza spoke, and others as parts of other organizations affiliated with you guys spoke. I encourage everyone to go and seek that out. That's www.cpac.ca, headline politics, and do a search. Please, before we go, Dorotea, pronounce your name correctly so that at least once, at least once people can hear how it's supposed to be said.
Well, I'm gonna say it in Italian then. It's Dorotea Gucciardo. Which beautiful. Is fine. Nobody else can say that. Thank you.
Well, that's beautiful. Thanks a lot, Dorotea, for coming on and speaking with us today. Good luck in the future. I want everyone else to stick around. John Helmer's here after the break. Keep the faith, eh?
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much.
As the Gaza district becomes one big apocalypse, as hunger eats at everyone inside the walled-in ghetto, they all live in where hundreds of thousands have already died. In the final days of the final solution, whatever else somebody claims, there's the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Hunger Games. months after the last aid truck entered, with ribs protruding all over the strip, with Israeli troops guarding all of the borders, not letting in a truck or a plane or a ship. And then with barbed wire and machine guns, the